This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And a good morning to you, Mr. Master Gardener Bob Harris.
Good morning, Igor.
And we are live, and you heard the numbers. We do have our phone lines open and ready for you. If you have any questions for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372. And we're on Facebook Live as well. So look for facebook.com/WESB1075, or just type in WESB. You'll see it on Facebook, and you can stream us there. And see what Bob brought in to show us as well.
Yeah.
So, good morning. What's up?
I want to talk about, you know, I know there's probably some new gardeners or some gardeners that are getting a little elderly.
Okay. Or experienced.
Yeah. I got some tips for the new gardeners. You should start out small. I know a lot of you think that, well, I'll go rototill 100 by 100 foot area. You know, that takes a lot of time, and it can be tough. So to start out with, maybe start out with just a couple containers. And those containers can be a nice fancy pot, or they can be 5-gallon buckets. They make it real easy. And you can grow a lot of vegetables in those containers. They have vegetables that were made just for container growing. Matter of fact, sometimes it can even be better. You know, I prefer growing my tomatoes in containers. I can really control the watering and the fertilizing because they're a little different than, say, lettuce, you know. So,
when you say containers, could it be like any container, or is it a specific container that you would recommend?
Yeah.
We can't use like a storage tote or something like that, or could we?
Sure.
As long as it has drainage?
Yeah, as long as you drill a few holes in the bottom and don't set it flat on the ground, because those will plug up those holes. So kind of elevate it a little bit, put a few rocks under it or something to elevate it so it's not touching the ground, so that it can drain through those holes.
Couple slats of 2x4s maybe,
yeah,
or something,
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, anything like that. But you can use any kind of container that you can imagine.
Cool. Okay.
And some of them can be quite decorative, and it makes it a lot more fun that way too. But should be able to hold as much soil as you can put in a 5-gallon bucket. So the roots can spread out and there's enough soil there so that when you do water it, it'll hold that plant, give them enough water to get through the day.
Besides tomatoes, what do you think, what else is good for a container?
I've seen corn growing in containers.
Wow, really?
Every vegetable that you can imagine.
Cucumbers?
I've even seen, huh?
Cucumbers?
Cucumbers, okay. Oh gosh, yeah.
Okay.
Now you may have to devise some kind of trellis for the cucumber to climb up so it doesn't spread out. Same with zucchini squash. That's one of the every gardener's favorite here. They do have zucchini squash that are meant for containers, or you can devise kind of a trellis that you can help it go up so it doesn't get way out of bounds. Yeah, just about every vegetable you can imagine, you can grow in a container.
So start small. You don't have to go big or go home, right?
No, you don't have to.
The moral of the story.
But for those that do want to go right into the ground, you know, it's highly recommended that you build a raised bed. Now, that can just be a 2x6 built into a square, but do two of them so that you can rotate your crop from year to year, because one kind of plant can build up a disease, or it can rob that area of a certain nutrient, so that if you rotate, it gives that go from that one bed to another bed, then it gives that first bed a chance to replenish itself.
Is there kind of like a rule of thumb, like this kind of vegetable – is related to this vegetable, so then rotating doesn't make sense because they take the same nutrients?
Yes, yes.
So, like, if I have tomatoes 1 year, what would be the next year to be the opposite of that?
Opposite of that? Lettuce, onions, eggplant, goes on. What it'd probably be easier for me to say what you shouldn't.
Okay.
Tomatoes are kind of related to peppers, so you don't want to plant tomatoes in one bed and then peppers in it the very next year, and or eggplant. Tomatoes and eggplant, they're really closely related, so you don't want to plant them in the same spot. Don't plant an eggplant where you planted tomatoes last year, because they take the same kind of nutrients. They get the same kind of diseases, so be careful of that. But they're beans and peas are a good one to rotate to. You've planted your tomatoes in one bed. Now the next year, plant beans or peas. They can help replenish the soil quickly even. So they're a good one. You know, you've probably driven by those big farms where the 1 year they plant corn, the next year they plant soybeans. It's that same family, them soybeans in the bean family there. They help revive the soil so that the third year you can go back to corn.
Oh, very neat.
Yeah. So try to use those theories when you're gardening. But in the container gardens, you should use bag soil. Don't use your garden soil in a container, because it doesn't drain well enough. And if we have a long streak of rain or wet weather or cool weather, that can stay wet and soggy, and that will harm a plant quicker than drying out will. And you really don't notice it because it's the roots that are starting to rot off because they're smothering to death, lack of oxygen. So always use the bag soil in containers. And when you're done, after the season's done, dump the container out. Dump it into out in your lawn, level off a spot. Dump it into your vegetable garden, spread it out, and it'll help revive that way too. But don't try to reuse it year after year because it just gets weaker and weaker. I should back up a little bit. The bag soil is really not soil. It's everything but soil.
Oh.
But in a container, that's what works best. You really don't want soil. Our soil is what we call a clay-based soil. So there's lots of clay particles in. Not so bad. Clay particles hold water longer and fertilizer longer than, let's say, peat moss, or a real popular one now is coconut coir. Those don't really hold any nutrients, but they do help with the drainage, which is important for containers because you're in just a real closed, confined area, and you want that to drain quickly so the air can get to the roots. The roots, I haven't mentioned that yet this year. I guess I should start.
What's that?
Plants need air as much as they need water.
Oh, okay.
And so that's real important. A wet, soggy soil, there's not many plants. There are plants, but not many that can grow in wet, soggy soil like a swamp, you know. So container soil helps it drain well so it doesn't become wet and soggy because the roots will smother in there.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe I've said too much of all
no,
that.
No, you're all right. You're all right. So, yeah, containers are a great way for beginners to kind of explore and see what works, what doesn't. Or if you don't want to do the containers, like you said, maybe a small raised bed.
Yeah, small raised bed. And again, the raised bed, because it's going to drain a little better. You know, here in Bradford, we can get a lot of rain.
No.
Surprise, huh?
I haven't noticed.
Yeah. So the soil can get very wet, and of course that blocks out all the air and then starts to form methane gas, and that will choke plants too. So it's a lot of problems. So raised beds are the way to go. And if you don't want to do 2x6, then dig that ditch all the way around your bed so it looks like it's a raised bed. It's higher than the perimeter.
Okay.
Wow, I got stuttering there, didn't I?
Higher than the perimeter.
Yeah. So you have two sides that the air can enter, and of course that's going to help it drain better. Now, of course, we can, and I'm going to predict this. I'm going to stick my neck out because it seems like we may have a hot, dry summer, and then we may have to water a lot.
Your theory is that we're getting all the rain ahead of time.
It just seems like we get so much precipitation every year, no matter what, whether it comes in snow or rain, we get so much. I think we've already reached or pretty close to that limit. So I'm guessing, and I've talked to some other gardeners that have been doing it for a long time, and they seem to agree with me, because we have seen it in the past too, that after we've had a really snowy, wet winter and now a really wet spring, really wet spring, that when it does dry out, it's probably going to be hot and dry for an extended period. So be prepared with that too. There's ways to correct that too, so you don't have to go out there and water constantly. When it does get hot and dry, maybe it's a good time for a layer of mulch over your garden. That'll help hold the moisture in for a much longer period of time, so you don't have to go out there and water every day. In containers, a little trick for that, because I know a lot of people buy that nice hanging basket for Mother's Day, and by July they're out there watering it 2 and 3 times a day. Add some soapy water. Dawn dish soap, the liquid Dawn dish soap, is excellent. And you just fill up your watering can and then give it a good
squish.
Good squish of the Dawn dish soap. And then water your hanging basket. That soap will form a little barrier around each little droplet, so it holds there longer. Now your plant can penetrate through that soap and get that water, but the water will be preserved a lot longer, so you don't have to water 2 or 3 times a day. In greenhouses and big production areas, they even make a product, I can't remember the name.
Aqua. There's a thing that they formulated that essentially does the same thing.
That does the same thing.
But this
thing
is the home remedy version. Yeah. Just get the cheap you know, dish soap.
Which I'm not a real big fan of home remedies, but.
But this one works.
But this one works, yeah. I've used it myself with great success. So keep that in mind. Maybe it's a good idea to get that little bottle of Dawn dish soap ready already.
Now, besides the hanging baskets, can you do that with your fruit and vegetables in
the
containers?
Certain ones. I'm going to speak.
Are my tomatoes going to like start tasting like dish soap?
Your tomato. I'm laughing at myself because I've done this. Most of your vegetables are going to be fine.
Okay.
But the lettuce, don't do it with your lettuce. Lettuce and spinach and so on, it'll make them very bitter tasting. They can absorb some of that soap, so don't do it with the lettuce.
But they'll be the cleanest lettuce in town.
Yeah, true. And also another benefit from the soap in the water, a lot of bugs like to spend part of their life in the soil, or they just lay their eggs in the soil. And that soap will surround that egg or that small insect that's living in your soil. It'll surround them and smother them. So it can be very beneficial in that way, too. Not only holds water, but can also rid your soil of a lot of insects that you don't want in there.
Now, what about the ones that you do want?
It won't bother them because most of them, like the bees and the butterflies, they don't lay their eggs in your pots. So they're not going to be affected.
Okay. What about worms? Are they beneficial?
Yeah, but I've never seen soap bother the worms. Yeah, worms are beneficial because they aerate the soil. And, of course, they do fertilize the soil, too, because they're eating the compost or whatever that's there. And they're making it more usable to the plant. So, yeah, worms are very beneficial. Soap won't hurt them. They'll come to the surface so they can breathe easier, and then when the soap dissipates, then they'll go back underground. No problem with worms.
All right. 368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. What else would you like to talk about today?
I better cover these plants here.
Okay. You want to cover them now, or do you want to thank Worth W. Smith first?
Let's thank Worth Smith.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they make the show possible. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We'll talk about the plants that are on the camera on Facebook Live right now. Back in a second on B107.5 FM.
Spring has sprung. It's time to get your gardening underway with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. Start with their big selection of garden seeds and fertilizers to grow all your favorite vegetables and flowers. Build attractive planting beds and landscape edging with railroad ties from Worth W. Smith. Dress it up with the popular black pearl mulch and add bags of landscape stone and pavers to finish it off. You'll be the envy of your neighborhood. It's time to get started. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM, and we're on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB107.5, but we are live on the air right now. If you'd like to give a call and ask the Master Gardener, Bob Harris, a question, please do, 368-9372. And what are we looking at here on camera, Bob?
Some of the more unusual annuals. That we can grow in our garden, and I'll start with the first one here, great big leaf. This is really not known for its flower. It will flower, but it's not something that's
striking.
The
leaf is the star on this
right.
one. I see it's a big, giant pink leaf with a border of green kind of speckled around.
And they come in many different colors.
Now, what is it called?
Caladium. Now, this likes bright light, but it doesn't like full sun. And it likes lots of moisture, so you have to keep the soil good and moist all the time. So it's a neat, interesting plant to grow, and because it has big foliage. A lot of our annuals have little tiny leaves, and this helps break that up so it even stands out more because of the different foliage. And that's important when you're planting an annual bed. To try to use different shapes of foliage, the leaves, and different sizes. It adds a lot more interest to it than just flower color. So that's the caladium.
And how big? Does that get big around or tall? Or?
Yeah, they will get around a foot and a half tall, foot and a half wide. But again, it's an annual. But you can dig this one up come late fall and save it in your basement or a cool place, and then bring it out next year and regrow it. You can save that one.
Neat. Okay.
The next one is what I call heliotrope. Some people call it the vanilla plant.
Okay.
we discussed this earlier. We're both smelling it. It's highly, highly scented plant.
Very sugary, flowery scent.
Yes.
I don't know that I would compare it to vanilla ice cream, say, I don't want to eat it.
yeah. But it has a very, very nice smell.
Yeah, it does.
Attracts a lot of pollinators. Bigger leaf with a lot of texture in the leaf. So that adds interest in the annual bed too there.
Now, this one's a deep purple kind of color.
Yeah.
Do they come in different?
They do. They'll come in a white too, but most of the time all you'll see is this nice deep purple color. And again, highly, highly scented. So that's one you want to grow where you're going to be at your front door, back door, on your patio or deck, you know, so you can really appreciate it. And certain days, the scent will waft all the way through the area.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Very pleasing. Another one, this one's called Pentas. Just a very, real unusual, real sharp leaves. Unusual flowers, attracts a lot of pollinators. You just don't see it a whole lot, although it's one of my favorites because it blooms like crazy all summer long. And this will come in different colors too, not just the pink that you're seeing here. And this one really likes the full sun. It can withstand a lot of hot, dry conditions. So that's a really nice annual.
What is it called again?
Pentas.
Yeah. I see there's a lot. So there's a lot of leaves on this one, but you're saying that it's going to get a lot more flowers.
Oh, yeah. A lot more flowers. Yeah.
It's just a baby.
Yeah, it's a baby.
It's got to grow.
Yeah. Okay. As most of the potted plants you'll buy in the greenhouse or nursery, they're all babies, and they'll all get much bigger. And the last one is one of my favorites. I used to grow a lot of this at Pitt. You don't see it a lot in gardens. I don't know why, because it's Angelonia. Angelonia has a common name. I forget what it's called, though, the common name. But Angelonia, it has a real waxy leaf. So that protects it from a lot of bugs that like to eat your plants. I've never seen a bug on this plant, but it does have a long flower stem, so the flower stands way up in the air. They can get close to 2 foot tall. They don't need staked. It's a real strong plant, and it comes in a lot of different colors. And I don't know, the flower looks kind of like a dragon there in it. Can you imagine that? No, he's shaking his head. No.
I will defer to you, okay. Mr. Master Gardener.
Looks a whole lot like a snapdragon flower anyhow. And
it's kind of like you look at a cloud, like, hey, it looks like the baker's hat.
Depends on who you are.
Looks like a stegosaurus to me.
Or it looks a lot also like an orchid flower.
Okay, yeah.
You see that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really neat. And again, I say real bug-free, can withstand a lot of heat. Doesn't mind getting dried out once in a while. That real waxy, shiny leaf, that wax coating on the leaf helps preserve a lot of that moisture in there, so it can withstand some of the hot and dry that we're probably going to go through. So that's a real good choice, and you hardly ever see it in a garden, so maybe it's time to try it out. Works great in containers, too. All these will work great in containers or in the ground.
And that's called, again, the...
Angelonia.
Angelonia. So now I see this has, like, two columns of the flowers.
Yeah.
I see another one starting to... So this doesn't have any flowers on it yet.
Yet, yeah.
How many will this... Will this keep going, growing more columns once you plant that in the ground? So I see about maybe four or five of them are in this little pot right here that it comes in.
Yeah.
So they'll multiply.
Multiply. Yeah. Yeah. You know, as the season goes, you may have six or eight stalks with flowers.
Nice.
And with most flowering plants, once all the flowers are done, and this is what's neat too, it starts flowering. I'm skipping around.
Flowering
from the bottom, and the flowers open up to the very tip. And once that last flower at the very tip of that flower stalk blooms and fades, then you clip off that stalk, and that'll help encourage it to send up another stalk of flowering. Oh. All flowering plants, you know, their goal in life is to grow to a certain size, then flower to attract pollinators and get pollinated so they can produce seed. So if you clip off that flower stalk, once it's spent, enjoy it while it's there, then it forces that plant to say, I got a flower. Mm-hmm. So I can get pollinated and produce seed. So it'll send up more, and it'll do it all season long, right up to a hard frost.
Wow.
So okay. A nice plant.
And I like how every flower is uniform. They all have the purple on the top, and they all have the white on the bottom.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're starting to see the rhododendrons and azaleas blooming. And the reason for that is it's... a key for the pollinator. It's showing that the pollinator exactly where to land and how to get to the pollen or the nectar.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Plants, you know, really are smart. Smarter than we probably give them credit for.
Yeah, they're listening to us right now saying they don't realize.
Possibly. Possibly, yeah. There's been a lot of studies with that in the last few years. I won't go into that. But nice waxy leaf, can withstand a lot of heat, won't dry out quickly. The opposite end, this...
that highly scented one, the vanilla.
Yeah. If you've rubbed the top of the leaf, You'll feel little tiny hairs. That's another way of protecting the moisture in this plant. Them little tiny hairs, they're really throwing shade on the leaf. And
oh, neat.
They're stopping a lot of predators from eating the leaf, because as soon as they touch that hair, they don't like that. And to them, it can be sharp and painful. So they leave this plant alone. There's not many insects that will bother this plant. But those little tiny hairs also protect the moisture that's in the leaf, kind of like a cactus. A cactus has a lot of thorns that protects it from predators eating it, but it's also throwing enough shade there so that it doesn't dry out real quickly. So that's one of the things that plants do to protect moisture.
Very cool. We have about 5 minutes left in the show. If you wanted to get to some of your bullet points here that you have on your clipboard of notes and doom here.
Yeah. I did want to mention about solar lights. I think I have in the past.
Solar lights.
Yeah.
I remember once you said that they could have a negative effect.
They can have a negative effect.
Okay.
For two ways. And I have solar lights, so I'm not degrading them.
But you have to cleverly put them in places where they won't affect your plants. All
they
right.
can affect the flowering and fruiting of plants because it throws off their cycle. All plants have a cycle. When it gets to so many hours of sunlight, they start to produce a certain thing. And at the end of the year, the same thing can happen. So many less hours of sunlight, then our maple trees start to turn the nice color and other plants turn nice color. Solar light can affect that cycle because now all of a sudden they're getting more light than they were grown up to use. So it does confuse them.
They're not getting enough sleep.
Yeah, yeah. So keep that in mind. You know, it's really nice to have a nice potted geranium there and a nice solar light in it so you can see it even at night. But you may be affecting its flowering.
Is there like a rule of thumb? Do you need to keep them the light so many feet away, or how the brightness, the lumens in? Or?
Yeah, the lumens. Yeah, there is, and you can buy a tool that tells you how many lumens it's given. You know, I don't know the exact numbers right offhand. I used to, but just be aware. You know, watch your plants, or maybe put your solar lights or your plants not so close together because it can affect them. Not all plants. Some plants don't care. All the light they can get, they love, you know. But some plants, yes, it can affect them.
What are some of the plants that could tolerate it?
Why'd you ask me a question?
I don't know, because you're the master gardener, and you know these things right off the top of your brain.
Think about where the plant comes from, first of all.
Oh, okay.
And if it comes from an area on Earth, like the desert that gets extremely long days, then that probably can withstand it. Or the Mediterranean, you know, those plants can withstand that. Or if it comes from Central America, where there's a lot more light than where we have in Bradford, then those plants probably can withstand it. And it's neat. The plants we have, how much time do we have? I don't even know.
We got 3 minutes.
Because I'm going off on another tangent.
We're good. We're talking flowers and plants, okay. Man. That's what we do here on the gardening show.
When you're growing your plants or planting your vegetable garden or around your house, anything like that, you know, try to think about this. You know, the cherry originated in Asia Minor. The cauliflower originated on the Isle of Rhodes. The Brussels sprouts come from Turkey. The blackberries came from everywhere on Earth, and so did blueberries. But the beet originated in Greece. Basil originated in India. So when you're planting your garden, what I'm trying to say is you're planting a whole world there. Plants that came from all different parts of the world. Now, of course, they've been hybridized to accept our area better and better, but they still do have those genes in them that were there when they first started to grow in a certain area.
We have a phone call.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
Hi, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Bob, hi. I was wondering, a friend of mine asked me to save my coffee grounds because she puts them around her house. What do you use those for?
Okay. Several things. Number one, the coffee grounds are going to have a lot of nitrogen. You know, this always amazed me that we like nitrogen just as much as plants. That's the number one thing that plants need is nitrogen. But also, coffee grounds give off a scent that ants and other insects don't like at all. So it does deter ants from entering our house. So it's two things. Yeah, save your coffee grounds. They can be very beneficial. I throw all mine in my compost pile. Once in a while, I'll throw a handful out in the garden, too.
All right. Hey, that's a great question. Thanks a lot for your call.
And thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Good question. I like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of some of those garden hacks, but that's one that I have used for years and years, and so I know it works, and it doesn't do any harm to anything.
All right. And with that, we're out of time on another edition of The Gardening Show. We'll be back next week.
Okay.
We will, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. If you'll come back, I'll have you.
All right.
We love it. So The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. We'll be back next Saturday at 8:30, as always. And you can watch the show again on demand on Facebook Live and hear it on demand on WESB.com. Bob, thank you so much.
You're welcome.